Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. I'm glad you're with us. We are trying to reach Roberta Franklin in regards to the scheduled march for August 13th, the mass march against mass incarceration. The best I understand it, there are now about 70 different organizations within America that are going to participate on this. I don't know if they're aiming for a million-man march or any such thing, but what they're trying to do is bring focus to the need for change, to the fact that vastly disproportionate numbers of black and Hispanic Americans are sent to prison for minor amounts of drugs, that these laws, which were crafted supposedly to send drug traffickers, major importers to prison, are being used on people in the community, people who perhaps are selling a bit of drugs to make enough profit to support their own habit. Let's see. Philip tells me we don't have her online. We're going to try another guest or two. If you get the chance, give me an email, dean@drugtruth.net. I'd love to hear your program ideas. This is Mr. Glenn Greenway.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Since the U.S. invasion in 2001, Bush's so-called first victory on the war on terror has produced 10,200 tons of opium, or about 1,000 tons of pure heroin, according to U.N. estimates. Last Friday, a memo from the U.S. Embassy in Kabul to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was leaked to the New York Times by an anonymous American official. The memo asserted that Afghan President Hamid Karzai had failed in addressing the country's heroin trade, also blaming the British for being, quote, substantially responsible, end quote, for the problem. The New York Times has now responded by condemning the memo, editorializing that it, quote, requires amazing audacity, end quote, for U.S. officials to blame Karzai for Bush administration failures. Meanwhile, the Washington Times has now declared Afghanistan a, quote, full-fledged narco state. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Okay, I want to read from a report that was sent to me by Lefty from a Texas prison. He's talking about the fact that a company hid the link between Prozac and suicide. And again, let's keep in mind marijuana, the one that they focus the most attention on these days, has still not killed anybody. But here they say, this is from USA Today, lives were threatened and Americans treated like guinea pigs because Eli Lilly and Company officials lied 15 years ago in denying there was any evidence the antidepressant Prozac could cause suicidal behavior. This according to a Harvard psychiatrist. The situation gets worse. A gunman who killed himself and eight others had been treated for Prozac. So, you know, they're wasting, they say, $50 to $70 to $80 million a year in fighting this drug war. Excuse me, $1 billion a year. Philip, you're over there. I want to ask you a question, my friend.
Go ahead.
You run into people out in the marketplace and around the city. Do you ever run into anybody who is a drug warrior? Anybody that we could get come sit next to me here and do this show?
Honestly, I really don't think I've never met a drug warrior. I mean, I have met my share of both people who use drugs and people who are don't use drugs, but it's for them it's much more of a personal choice. I honestly can't say that I've really known anyone who I know for a fact was, you know, supported the drug war 100%. Although I did have a chance to talk to a former DEA agent once, who was telling me some stories about his time as a DEA agent down on the border and the sorts of stuff they would do down there, and it's kind of weird, some of the stuff he was telling me, because he was telling me how that agents were collaborating with judges, you know, to try and see how long they could put these guys away for, and, you know, sorts of things like that. So that, I'd say that'd probably be about as close as I ever came to anybody who was a drug warrior.
Well, thank you for that. I want to say something, remind folks of the fact that now the Drug Truth Network is offering a $750 reward to any police captain or above, any district attorney, any judge, any agent of the DEA, the CIA, or the Justice Department who's willing to come on this program and debate the policy of drug prohibition. They can use it for their own uses, or they can, you know, go buy a pack of Budweiser if they want. We have for too long been beaten up, hidden in the closet, put away wet, if you will, on this subject, because there's no one who can defend this policy of drug war. I just had a letter published in the Herald Zeitung newspaper in New Braunfels. The heading, regulating distribution of drugs would hit pocketbooks of drug cartels. For more than 90 years, this drug war has wrought havoc on our communities, our nation, and indeed the whole world. We have invested more than half a trillion U.S. tax dollars for absolutely zero results. Despite the arrest of tens of millions of our fellow citizens for baggies of powders, flowers, and pills, drugs are cheaper, purer, and more freely available to our children than ever before. Police estimate that as much as 90% of all crimes are at least tangentially related to substance abuse. Despite our efforts, aspirin and Tylenol still kill more people each year than all the products made by unprofessional black market chemists. And most of the deaths attributed to drug war result from the violence of prohibition, not the use of the drugs themselves. The day we regulate the distribution of these illegal drugs is the day we evaporate the worth of Osama bin Laden's opium stash, is the day we destroy the Colombian drug cartels, is the day we eliminate the reasons for which most violent street gangs exist, is the day we will have lots of room in prison, as much as 90% more for any street corner vendor who would sell drugs to our children. It is the day we basically eliminate drug overdose deaths, and is the day we begin to restore respect for law enforcement and the judicial system, which have become tainted by the enormous sums of black market payoffs. Zealotry in promulgating eternal drug war seems never to be challenged, yet challenge is necessary. Open discussion is paramount to ending this war on our own people. This prohibition of certain potions is quite simply the modern equivalent of the Salem witchcraft trials. Should we not judge people by their actions rather than the plant products found in their pockets? It's up to you, my friends. You are the only people who can make this change. I've done my best. I've talked to these politicians, and behind closed doors, they will, in fact, agree with me. They will, in fact, tell me that, yes, something needs to be done. But then they, you know, turn into cows and say, I will not be the one to do it.
Well, I'm going to throw one back at there. You asked me a question, so I'm going to ask you a question. You know, people who are regular listeners to your show know that you're a great proponent of reform of drug laws, but maybe some of them out there are wondering, how did you first get involved in this project? What was the impetus behind becoming a drug reformer for you?
You really have to reach back to the year 1971. I was living in a place called the Sad House up on Centennial at Long Point. There's about 14 of us, had a little tribe going, if you will. And the police kicked in the door about 14 times. The first time they had a warrant, and they seemed to think that gave them the right to come back any time they wanted. Well, that particular crew got busted. It was led by a guy named Tiger Martin, and as I understand it, they got kicked off the force and, sullied, if you will. But during that time frame, the 14th time they came to the house, they arrested me and about, half dozen of us. And one of them was this young boy named Ed. Ed was 17, very thin, had long hair. Anyway, Ed was due to go to court the next morning. And the cop told him, he said, Ed, I'm going to be there tomorrow when they sentence you. And tell them what you've been up to. And so the next morning, early, as the sun was coming up, Ed climbed up into his treehouse and he blew his brains out because he knew what awaited him were he to get the sentence, which seemed to be promised to him. And I'll be honest, I didn't do much for decades. It was about 1998. I got the idea, wait a minute, there is a way. there is something I can do. And I wrote a screenplay. It was called Century of Lies. And it basically told the history of the 100-year war on drug users, and in particular on marijuana users, and how it had been. It contained quotes from the U.S. Congressional records, letters from the American Medical Association, kind of built a dialogue around those official documents. And I wanted to tell the truth of how this happened. I had court proceedings out of Texas, out of South Dakota as well, that showed where this came from. The one in South Dakota in particular still rings, that they said from behind the pulpit that you give one of these Mexican beat workers a few tears, they mean tokes, off a marijuana cigarette, the next thing you know, he thinks he's been elected president of Mexico and sets out to kill all his enemies. And then they voted on the new law. So there is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, moral clarity, whatever involved. And the more I delved into this, the more I realized that something needed to be done. This was a terrible legacy to be leaving for our children, to be handed down to future generations, this morass, this Salem witchcraft trials is what it really amounts to. That, well, you got some flowers in your pocket, boy, you're going down. And it became more of an irritant the more I delved into it, as I began talking to the congressman and the judges and the policemen. And I began to realize that, I keep saying it, there is nobody willing to support our policy. And I think the more I'm able to present that truth, the more I'm able to make it evident and glaring to my listeners, to my friends, to everyone I meet, the sooner we will end this, the sooner we will bring about the change necessary to hand over a better situation, a better future to our children. Because this drug war, it's ever escalating. Whether they do good, whether they do bad, we need more money. And it will continue until we dare to stand up and say the emperor has no clothes, that there's no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact at all. And that's why I do this. I gave up a lucrative job almost 4 years ago as an accountant, an auditor, a project analyst for the likes of Chevron, Enron, Dynegy, those kind of folks, and committed myself to helping make that difference. And luckily, there have been friends along the way. There have been those who have seen it, something worthy of their support. And so we do muddle along. Some weeks we eat rather thin, once a day perhaps, but we keep moving on. And it gives me great satisfaction to learn from those people I meet, as I mentioned with Philip, in the marketplace, those who appreciate what we're up to, that get behind what we're up to. And, I guess, Philip, what motivates me? What got me started? It's you. It's my kids. It's the potential that's just being frittered away. The $50 billion poured down the drain every year. The chance to find a better way. Because they don't want the studies to even be done. They don't want people to learn about the properties of marijuana, because there are so many diseases and maladies and illnesses that, not always, but many times, can benefit from the use of marijuana or even opium or the coca products. Because it is our life. It is our future. It is our choice. And we should not allow this to be controlled by some faraway, wizard, some drug czar in D.C. that knows exactly what drugs we need and exactly how much we should use, and who's perfectly willing to kill us and our whole family to keep us from taking more. Philip, let's go ahead and take our halfway break.
Journey for Justice. The March on Washington, D.C., Saturday, August 13th. Millions imprisoned in the land of the free. More than 40 organizations already on board. Help end the prison industrial complex. Contact Roberta Franklin, 334-220-4670. Email firstladytms@aol.com. Visit journeyforjustice.org. The Justice Policy Institute is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting safe, fair, and effective alternatives to incarceration to protect public safety and benefit communities. Please visit the website of the Open Society Institute at soros.org. Again, that's www.soros.org.
Listen to me. Legalizing marijuana may sound good in theory, but how many people do you know that truly want legal pot to be the reality? How about you personally? When was the last time you called your congressman or attended a reform meeting? How many letters have you written? The government does not act on its own free will. In fact, the government has no authority to act outside the will of the people. The simple fact is that the government hears very few voices demanding drug reform. And if you have called your congressman, attended a reform meeting, or written a letter, then you are in the minority. The voice of the majority demand protection from the dangers of addiction, not legalization. The government acts on the authority of the voice of the majority. Face it, you are very likely part of that majority. With a system of government that allows its citizens to invoke change, you have called no one, attended no meetings, written no letters. It is clear that you too seek the protection of the government, and the government will continue to act on your authority. Not even the reformers believe. What you are about to hear is the audio from the May 26, 2005 O'Reilly Factor, where Ann Hayes, a former DEA agent, debates Dr. Ethan Nadelman, executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. Listen carefully as the good doctor refutes the claim that the drug war is necessary.
I just think that if we're going to get serious about drugs again, and we've got a real crisis here, and I think everybody agrees with that.
I think that's right. It's related to all crime.
Yes, it is. It's related to why kids are having sex when they're 14 years old, why kids are being exploited. It all has to do with drugs.
The methamphetamine, it's destroying our... And in that regard, there ought to be tough penalties. Now, let me ask you this. You're not against all mandatory minimum sentences for everything, are you?
Are you kidding? Are you?
There is a problem with the war on drugs, okay?
There's a serious drug problem, right? There's a problem on drug campuses, there's a problem in our society.
One good reason for the drug war? The people demand the drug war. And as long as that is true, the government has no authority to end it. This has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
Okay, that was Winston Francis. It was taken in part from last night's O'Reilly program on Fox. And Bill wasn't in, but Winston did what's typical of the drug warriors. He kind of took the data and massaged it and manipulated it to his advantage. And I wanted to give you a more pure extract from that show, a little bit more of the truth, and let you make your own decision.
Thanks for staying with us. I'm John Kasich, reporting for Bill O'Reilly. And in the Unresolved Problems segment tonight, controversial new proposal to help fight the war on drugs. If you see somebody or know about somebody, be it a stranger, your best friend, or even your wife, using or selling drugs and you don't report it, you could go to jail for at least 2 years. That's what Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner is trying to sell to Congress. With us now is Dr. Ethan Nadelman, Executive Director of the Drug Policy Alliance, and Ann Hayes, former special agent for the DEA, now president of the Investigative Management Group. Now, Ann, you thought I was going to be on your side on this. I think this is just sort of nutty. I mean, if you're in college and your roommate is using drugs, you got to report the roommate or you go to jail?
Well, John, drugs are such a serious problem right now, and we really haven't had a serious discussion about it in years. So if nothing else, what this bill is going to do is it's going to get people debating again.
But what about
drugs.
That policy? I mean, fine about the debate. What about the idea that if I don't go and rally
somebody...
Well,
it's peer pressure. You know what? If you go into a college today, you can get any drug you want at any time you want it.
Yeah.
And there's no peer pressure not to use drugs.
Right.
That, if nothing else, will give you peer pressure to...
So what you're saying is that we... That if peer pressure... This isn't peer pressure... This is like they're going to lock you in prison for 2 to 10 years.
Yeah, there's mandatory minimums involved here.
You're not for this.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there is a problem with the war on drugs, okay?
John, there's a serious drug problem, right? There's a problem on drug campuses, there's a problem in our society. But a 2-year mandatory minimum criminal sentence, I mean, come on, Ann.
Okay.
You realize that's going to take that tens of millions of Americans will technically become criminals. And by the way, look, I have no problem with the DEA. Your guys is to enforce the law, right? But this is going to say that basically anybody, anywhere, if you know about any drug transaction, 2 years behind bars. I mean, this is not Soviet Russia.
Here's my only concern. You got these sex offenders who get out of prison, violent criminals get out of prison. 50 to 60% of the people in prison are related to drugs. So we're releasing the bad guys, and I'm not sure all these people in prison on drugs are bad people. Tell me why I'm wrong.
No, I know that.
We don't need mandatory minimums to deal with drug offenses. We need sensible discretion. We need some decency in this sort of stuff. If anyone wants to have a debate, we don't need Sensenbrenner's proposal.
And how do we separate those? Look, he's got a point. You've got a kid who's in school. Right. He's a good kid, first time, sits 5 years in prison, ruins his life. How do we separate the serious from the not so serious?
Well, you
serious.
Do have to use common sense.
But we're not these laws
right
now. Well,
I think this is what the proposed law is going to be. It hasn't been passed yet. It passed the judiciary, but it hasn't.
Can you imagine it passed the judiciary committee 6-1?
Yes, it did. It
you know
sure
what?
Did.
Congress gets frozen, don't they?
But
they
you
can't
know what
make
it
good
is?
Decisions.
No, I think what it is that people realize that we have a serious problem with kids and drugs in this country, and that this is our first. If we're going to take it seriously, we have to make the penalty serious. And I think that's what people are expecting from us.
Oh, come on. The penalties are serious already.
No, they're not.
Why do we need the federal government involved in this area?
Okay, and as promised, here's our little break point. I know some of you would have withdrawals if we didn't have named that drug by its side effects.
The district attorney of the Gulag City, Houston, Harris County, Mr. Chuck Rosenthal.
If people in Texas decide that they don't want to make the use of marijuana against the law, that's fine with me. It doesn't hurt my feelings at all.
To learn the truth about this matter, please visit the Marijuana Policy Project. That's at mpp.org. It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Cancers of the lung, trachea, bronchus, larynx, esophagus, pancreas, kidney, bladder, and cervix. Impotency, 25% of deaths from residential fires. Time's up. The answer, tobacco. Taxed, regulated, and in cahoots with the U.S. government. This message brought to you by the Coalition for Papier-Mâché, reminding you to get ready for this year's Piñatas Across America campaign.
Well, I kind of enjoy the fact that I get to express my opinions today, and I feel certain that there will come a time, whether it's 1 year or 10 years from now, when we will have whittled down the army of prohibition, and there'll be a dozen or 100 of them standing, and I think they'll, deserve to go have a war crimes tribunal and just see what the heck we can do with them for all the horrible pain and suffering they've inflicted on our nation. I'm reading now from Drug War Facts, and you can get a copy of yours if you'll just give them an email. Go to their website. It's at drugwarfacts.org. And they're saying that of the 246,000 state prison inmates serving time for drug offenses, this is back in 2001, 139,000, 57% were black, 47% were Hispanic, and 23% were white. They say the racially disproportionate nature of the war on drugs is not just devastating to black Americans. It contradicts faith in the principles of justice and equal protection of the laws that should be the bedrock of any constitutional democracy. It exposes and deepens the racial fault lines that continue to weaken the country and belies its promise as a land of equal opportunity. It undermines faith among all races in the fairness and efficacy of the criminal justice system. Urgent action is needed at both the state and federal level to address this crisis for the American nation. And the source was from Recommendations from Punishment and Prejudice, Racial Disparities in the Drug War. They go on to say further, our criminal laws, while facially neutral, are enforced in a manner that is massively and pervasively biased. The injustices of the criminal justice system threaten to render irrelevant 50 years of hard-fought civil rights progress. When total incarceration rates are estimated separately by age groups, Black males in their 20s and 30s are found to have high rates relative to other groups. Among the more than 2 million offenders incarcerated in 2002, an estimated 596,000 were black males between ages 20 and 39. I'm going to go forward here. Regarding state prison population growth from 1990 through 2000, the U.S. Department of Justice reports, quote, overall, the increasing number of drug offenses accounted for 27% of the total growth among black inmates, 7% of the total growth among Hispanics, and 15% of the growth among white inmates. And that's from Harrison and Page and Alan J. Beck, U.S. Department of Justice, Bureau of Justice Statistics. You know, those in power, those behind the pulpit, those who give their speeches at treatment centers and junior high schools, the drug czars, they are totally unwilling to discuss this subject. And the reason, you heard Winston talk about it in his report, that you haven't written the letter. You haven't shown that you object. You haven't spoken up. You know, can I have another bowl of gruel, sir? And it's your call. You know, if you want to endure this another 5, 10, your whole life, years, it's your call. But until you dare to speak up, until you dare to ask for that bowl, until you dare to say, wait a minute, this ain't working. This is not what I want. This is not what I want to leave to my children. Until you dare to speak up, well, it will continue. But it doesn't have to. And I'm asking you to be brave, to help bring the change and hand down that better situation to our kids. Let's see. We were totally unable to get a hold of Roberta. I apologize for that. I guess what we'll do is schedule her for another time. Again, she's sponsoring a march on Washington, D.C. for August 13th. If you want to learn more about it, you can visit her website, which is Journey. For justice.org. Next week, our guest will be San Ho Tree. He's a gentleman who travels extensively in Central and South America, who will give us a report on the drug war in Colombia, how the cocaine flow is still flowing despite our efforts of, you know, untold airplanes and helicopters spraying poisons on the peasant farmers' fields down there. I talk to you on the street. I hear from you, you know, at the pool halls, and you tell me, you're right on, let's do this. But you have to write that letter. You have to make that call. You have to send that email. And it's really pretty easy. Sit down, spend 5 minutes, write you up a one-paragraph statement. And you can use that same paragraph. You can mail it to the local paper. You can send it to all your elected officials, federal, state, local. And you can email it, you can copy it, you can put a stamp on it and mail it, you can use it and read from it and call them and tell them about it. Philip tells me we got about 30 seconds left. I once again, I just want to kick you in the behind. I want to make you do your part because I've got my neck stuck out about 3 meters here. And I need your support. I need you to cover my back. I need you to make those contacts with your elected officials and the local papers and those powers that be. You know, let's make this change. Let's hand down a better world to our children. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing on the edge of an abyss.